You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Thesis on Joan. I'm Megan, she, her.
And I'm Holly, they, them. Thesis on Joan is a podcast dedicated to amplifying voices from the LGBTQ plus community in the New York performing arts scene and examining the industry from a queer perspective. Today, Megan and I are sitting down with Andrea Prestonario.
So Andrea Prestonario is a performer, producer, and the executive director, co-founder of Ring of Keys, an advocacy organization that promotes the hiring of queer women and transgender and gender nonconforming artists working in musical theater. Regional credits include Allison in Fun Home twice at Baltimore Center Stage and Weston Playhouse, Sarah Brown in Guys and Dolls, Eliza in My Fair Lady twice, Maureen in Rent at Paramount Theater, Martha in 1776 at Oslo Rep, Louise in Gypsy at Drury Lane, Oak Brook, and Gertie in Oklahoma at Lyric Opera Chicago. Additionally, Andrea has performed at New York Theater Workshop, York Theater, Gulf Shore Playhouse, Writers Theater, Marriott Theater, and Timeline Theater, and many more. She received a Jeff Award for her work as Violet in Sideshow at the Boho Theater. She is a graduate of Ball State University and the school at Steppenwolf. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being here.
Hey, that's my cue, huh? Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me here.
Yeah, we're so excited to talk to you more.
Thanks. Wow. I get really sweaty when someone reads my bio. But I did like the twice that you added. I think that's like my life goal. Just make everything a twice.
It's pretty impressive. I'm so impressed. I'm like, these are insane. We'll talk more about it, but these insane iconic roles. Who gets to be Eliza twice?
Andrea, do you mind introducing yourself with your name one more time, your pronouns, and whatever you want to share about how you identify?
Yeah. Andrea Prestonario, she, her. And I am a cis woman, happy to be here. I usually use the term, queer, queer ingenue. And cis people seem to like that.
That's amazing.
I love that. You should trademark that now.
Can you talk about the inspiration to create Ring of Keys, and especially behind the quote, "You have to see it to be it," from Janine Tesori?
I can, yeah. So Ring of Keys launched 2.5 years ago. I co-founded it with my friend Royer Bacchus. And I think I'd love to chat too about the origin story of how we met, because that is so much of Ring of Keys, which... We had met doing a reading. Prior to doing this reading, we both knew the music director, and he's this really fun cis gay Arkansan man. And he was just like, "Andrea, there's someone I want you to meet. She's a lesbian." And he whispered it, and I was like, "Okay, Michael." Like, you know, it was just like really awkward, and he knew my girlfriend, so it wasn't like he was trying to set me up. And then, like, I go do the reading, like, meet Royer, and Royer, like, we become friends, and she's like, oh my God, Michael, it was so funny. Michael did this thing to me prior to the reading where he's like, Andrea, or Royer, I'm so excited for you to meet someone in the, she's a lesbian. And it was like, ha ha ha. And we like laughed about it. I mean, it like, this is pretty funny if you know this music director, because he's hilarious. But at the same time, we had this more deeper conversation surrounding the implications of that, right? Like, why is it that as lesbian women working in musical theater, we're still on the margins? Why is it that we say musical theater is so gay? Well, the fact is it's so gay, but it's not queer. So we were like, okay, where are our people? Like, it was a big deal for Royer to meet me. She didn't have any other lesbian actress friends. And she really didn't have a queer community. I didn't really have a queer community. I worked in Chicago for 8 years before I met another lesbian actress.
Like, wow. Oh my gosh.
Out, you know, let alone like the rest of the spectrum of queerness, which is insane. And like the one person I met became my girlfriend. So
we'll have to hear more about that.
You're welcome. Yeah. It's a good meet cute. We decided that we wanted to form a community, and we wanted, you know, we could have made this community of lesbian women or bisexual women, but it was important to us to actually, we really wanted to see our industry queered more, right? Like beyond cis gay male and beyond just like talking about sexuality. Like we wanted to encompass the rest of the queer spectrum. And so we wanted to create that space and that community for queer women, transgender and gender nonconforming artists. And, we launched in January of 2018, and there was three of us. And, now there's 400 members.
Oh my gosh.
And we can get into that too later, but there's members in 40 cities throughout the US, as well as members in London and in Canada.
That's incredible.
Which is insane in 2.5 years to think about. But one of the things that was so transformative to Royer and I was we had both had experiences seeing Fun Home individually, but they were both transformative for us. And I think it's maybe obvious to both of you why we would have such a transformative experience, but for someone that's straight, you know, cishet community might not understand what it was like to see yourself on stage and mirrored for the first time ever. Fun Home being a musical that made musical theater history by being the first time having a butch lesbian protagonist on our stages, which is, you know, there's a lot of work to do when it comes to queerness on stages, but that was a wonderful milestone. It was a white story, and it was, not a rural story. I mean, there's a lot of other like stories that we need to still be telling, but this, I think of this moment as like kind of, the new musical theater. Right. Then this is like this musical ushers in the future of a new musical theater, in my opinion. So, because that musical is so transformative to us, we decided we were trying to think of like what we wanted to name our organization. And, we thought about like that song in Fun Home called Ring of Keys, and it was poetic, right? We could have, you know, I have said this before, but we could have like named our organization like the National Queer Women and TGNC Alliance, right? Like we could have done that, like, but we were sort of looking for something a little more poetic. And so we went with Ring of Keys because, I mean, keys is about access. Keys is about opening doors. And that is what we were striving to do. So that is the origin and name origin story of how we came to be Ring of Keys.
Awesome. And I feel like this is becoming a reoccurring question on our podcast. It's not one we sent through initially, but can you tell us a little bit more about your first time seeing Fun Home, especially like retroactively knowing that you're someone who's going to take on that role one day? Like how how do you feel knowing that now, thinking back to the first time you saw Fun Home?
Oh, there's so much to say, right? I mean, this is a podcast that takes its name from that musical. So obviously we all have a deep spot in our heart for it. I actually am a bad lesbian because I didn't know Alison Bechdel until the musical, which is insane. Like, how did she not come on my radar? I don't know. But so I learned the musical first and then went and read the graphic novel. And seeing the musical, I mean, I don't know how to fully describe to a straight person what it's like to constantly, like, mentally, what's the word? Like, code switch. When you're watching it, something on stage, and you have to switch, like, genders of the story. Like, you have to do that extra labor in your head because it's sort of like how you're helping yourself make sense of it, right? I don't mean for it to sound so self-centered, but that is what we do when we go to the theater, right? Like, we take in that story and we compare it to our own experiences, and that's sort of how we connect and relate. And like, I do think in metaphors, and I think being a queer person, that is a lot of the work that you're doing, right? You're like, oh, love is love. Like, you understand, like, love, but like, what it's like to literally actually not have to do that, like, switching and see yourself on stage, like, see your story on stage is just so revolutionary. And I mean, the other funny thing is, like, I mean, I came out in 2002, and I mean, I literally did go to our school library to figure out homosexuality because it was 2002 and, you know, there was no YouTube, there was no social media. I didn't understand how to, like, live in the world as, like, a person who was so passionate about musical theater. And, like, I didn't know any other lesbians besides, Ellen DeGeneres. And so it was like, what, you know, like, what is this? Like, what are these feelings? I mean, so when Allison, like, goes to, like, try to, you know, she figures out that she's gay by, like, going to the bookstore. Oh, wait, that's just in the novel.
No, it's in the musical too.
No, mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. All of a sudden I was like, wait, did I? No, that's there. Yeah. So when I saw that experience, I was like, oh my God, you know, and like, Adrienne Rich, there's like a reference to her in the musical. It just is like, oh my God, my worlds get to come together finally. It's like so exciting. And yeah, so I mean, I just cried my eyes out, right? I mean, I was shaking. I saw it with a friend whose dad left her. They got divorced because he realized he was gay. So she has a gay father. And so some of the musical's themes resonated for her on a different level, but similarly, you know, I mean, that musical is just so, can I swear?
Yes.
It's just so fucking good. It's just so brilliant. And it has so much universality.
Yeah. At the end of the day, it's just a great musical too.
Yeah. Yeah. At the end of the day. Yeah, exactly. And like, a lot of people can walk away, like, connected. I found it interesting, like, how many people connect on, like, other levels, right? Like, the father daughter, and then they're like also getting this queer story on top of it. So it's a long answer to your question, which is like, oh my God, transformative.
No, that's awesome. I can't imagine what it's like to actually take on that role. It's got to be insane every night to just have that, like, be in that headspace every night.
Well, right. Well, then, yeah. And so, like, that was all my experience, like, seeing it and then getting to do it, right? That is another level of, like, oh my God, world's getting to come together. I cut my hair for the role, the first time I did it. And it was really cool because I actually, you know, I couldn't get arrested. I was in terms of work. I had a 2.5 year not working streak. Like, I couldn't get cast, and Ring of Fun Home broke that. Oh, wow. I launched Ring of Keys in January of 2018, and a month later I got a call asking me to play Allison in Fun Home. And so, like, it's just like, to me I get chills still, because it's like, that's about leaning into your truth. Like, here I'm saying, like, I'm gonna lean into this organization and, like, celebrate this queerness. I'm not going to hide this anymore. not that I was working that hard to hide it, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm actually leaning into my authentic self, and then the universe replies by saying, okay, well, we're going to break this like not working streak. So then, you know, so that was just like, I mean, it was transformative again to get to do the show and share that story with my family and just, oh, like the things my dad said to me, like after that opening night of that first production of like, you know, I had no idea, like, this is what it's like for you being gay.
Oh, wow.
Like, oh yeah, it was really moving.
Wow. And then how long after you did it the first time did you do it again?
I did it at Westin Playhouse in June of 2018. And then I did it again. I started rehearsals, I think 6 months later for the Baltimore one.
Wow.
Baltimore Center Stage. And those were radically different productions. And that was really cool to have such different perspectives on the piece. Baltimore Center Stage, the production was on their main stage, and they had all the bells and whistles, right? The furniture tracked on, they had traps. And at Westin Playhouse, it was in their brand new like black box space. So it was very intimate. I think it was only holding like 150 seats. So.
Oh, wow.
Very different productions, in that sense, but it was fun to get to a second chance at it because it got to just sort of deepen it. And like my opportunity to get to play, Eliza twice, it's always fun to do it the second time because you're basically spending a lot of time on learning things and then figuring out like your experience with the role is like very different than your experience when you're learning something for the first time. So like the second time you're just spending a lot of time trying to be malleable to like what it is, like you don't want to get, I didn't want to be fixed on what I believed this character is or was, and just being malleable to what the director and I could build together. So, and that second production was directed by Hannah Sharif, who's now gone on to become artistic director at St. Louis Rep.
Oh, cool.
That's awesome.
The Rep. I think we call it the Rep. Ah. In this country.
And those of us in the know.
And the first production was written by, was directed by Malcolm Ewan, who, rest in peace, passed away last year. Very sad. And, you know, he, was the founding artistic director of Westin Playhouse, one of the three guys. And I just love him so much for giving me that opportunity.
Hmm. That must have been one of his last shows then.
It was his last show. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh, yeah. So many feelings, not just the expected ones. Yeah. Oh man. Okay. Well, we're going to move. We're still always in the fun home world, but we're going to talk a little bit more about Rainy Keys. Sorry, I got very diverted there. I got very excited. So you refer to the members of the organization as keys. You shared a little bit about how, you know, a key is accessibility. A key is opening doors. What does it mean to be a key in the Ring of Keys group?
I think being a key is a celebration. I think that it's saying that I celebrate who I am, and it's not something that I'm going to silo. I think it's saying like I'm an asset that I'm bringing to the table. And you know, one has to want to be publicly out in order to join Ring of Keys, right? That's not something that we worked a lot of time on. We were devising the setup of Ring of Keys, like what that would mean. And one has to opt in, right? So they tell us how they self-identify. It's a self-determination, right? As we know, when it comes to queerness. So our vetting process has nothing to do with gender identity or sexuality. If someone says, this is who I am, then that's who they are, right? But I think what's really developed is sort of what I aspired to see happen, which is that being a key is like you're part of a community that's international, and it's a community that didn't already exist. So that's to me really thrilling. And I think I literally have hundreds of new friends because of Ring of Keys, or colleagues, I should say, right? Like I have, and I'm trying not to use the word literally so much, but I literally do have hundreds of new colleagues because of Ring of Keys. And I worked in for 8 years in Chicago without knowing another queer performer. So I knew many cis gay men performers, but and we love our cis gay brothers, right? We love them, but we wanted to create our own old boys network, right? Like we know that that exists. We know that our industry is, it's pervasive. The white cis gay male, occupation. Mm-hmm. And that's, I'm so glad that are those people, those friends of mine, those colleagues of mine are with us and in this industry together. And I'm so happy that they have a space that makes them feel welcome and good. And I also think that there's like, it's time to also like make room, you know, and diversify that leadership and diversify queerness. So
yeah, absolutely. How have you seen, you know, the Old Boys Club kind of work with your members and make an impact for them?
I mean, I think there's so many cis gay male allies of Ring of Keys. That's a lot of our allies, actually. And what I would call an ally is someone who's advocating for Ring of Keys, amplifying Ring of Keys, and then therein amplifying our members, donating funds. And the response has been really positive. If there is any criticism or negativity, I'm not hearing it. I hope I'm not opening the door to that right now.
We also wanted to talk to you more, if you could share a little bit about how Ring of Keys is working to create an anti-racist, inclusive Black, Indigenous, people of color space as well.
Yeah, I'm so glad we're talking about that. I mean, I think this work is ongoing, ever present, and has been prior to the murder of George Floyd and this movement that's currently happening. But I think it's something that I feel Ring of Keys has been doing the work for and continues to need to do more work for. We just put out a statement, as many organizations have done in this moment. But I noted in that statement that we started as two white cis lesbian women, you know, and we recognized that right at the top. We were like, we want this leadership to be diversified. We don't want it to just be the two of us. And what does that look like, you know? And throughout all of this 2.5 years, I mean, Ring of Keys is a volunteer organization and all of the labor is volunteer. So there's a privilege in volunteerism and recognizing that, while also recognizing the optics of like, okay, well, what are you doing about like you're two white people? Like, what are you doing about that? And so organically what happened at the beginning is we started to have people be like, I want to help. And I was like, great. We need hands. We need hands on deck. Like who's going to help? Who's going to help? And I was like, I looked around and pretty soon we had like a team of people that were volunteering for Ring of Keys. And I was calling, I wanted to validate their work and recognize it. But I looked around and I was like, it's all white people. Like, that's not okay. Like, you know, and so what does that mean? Like, okay, people of color haven't joined us at the table. Is it because they don't feel welcome? Like at a certain point, it became a part where somebody felt like, this is not a place where I want to volunteer my time or whatever. I don't want to make assumptions here of like what the reasoning was, but, so I invited a key member to join us at that volunteer team, gave her the responsibility as our outreach coordinator and recognized that that was labor that she was doing, that, you know, she had to be comfortable doing that labor. And she was going to be advocating for this to make sure the space was a safe space for our Black and Brown members. And I, you know, we continue to like talk, like we had a, her and I talked last week, and she's really hurting and she's really dealing with the grief of this moment and doesn't have the capacity right now to be like helping our other members in this moment. But we did talk about like, you know, there's more strategies that we can be doing to make sure that we are making those members feel safe and, that it's an inclusive space. And then, you know, I think, we were talking too about, is there some sort of like anti-racist workshop, you know, that we can offer all of our members? These are things that like corporations offer, and it's a little like kind of, you know, kind of a joke I'm hearing from like certain corporations where they're like, it's not, it's like led by a white person. Like, I, you know, it's just like, okay, if we're going to offer something, like, I don't want it to be like a joke. I don't want it to be something that's not legitimate. And, so there's that. And then we're working on, currently centering our, just in this moment right now, making sure that we're centering our Black and Brown members. And then we are doing our upcoming Pride concert is, going to center our Black identifying key members. So that is going to be on Saturday, June 27th, the Saturday of the Pride weekend. And that will be on our Facebook Live and YouTube Live channels. And I'm really happy to that we can, you know, create this space for members if they need it. I recognize that this may be inconsistent with some of our members' values or needs or priorities right now. But I hope for those that need it, that it can be a space for healing.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's so needed right now. In a similar vein, you know, as an ally to the trans and non-binary and gender non-conforming community, what do you think is important leading an organization for that community that includes that community to make sure that they also have a safe space and their needs met too?
Yeah, it goes back to the idea of when we were first starting and making sure that our leadership was diversified. One of the things that has been helpful is having that diversified leadership on from our trans members. I am really happy to have the trans leadership on our volunteer team that helps bring an awareness that I don't have and helps with our decision making that I don't always have. And that is just an example of how important it is to have different voices and bodies making decisions. You know, things like from the very beginning, we were making sure that we normalized pronouns. Right now in our theater industry, it's been pretty normalized, I would say. But at the very beginning, 2.5 years ago, it wasn't as much, I would say, 2018. And that was something that was really important to us as an organization. Like, you know, that is something that has to be in, you know, in every single social media post that we make, like making sure pronouns are there. And like now that's not really like we've gone beyond that, but I'm just saying like at the very beginning, like that was something as an example that we felt, okay, we need to make sure this is a space that our TGNC members feel that they feel that this is a safe space. And I mean, I think that based on the feedback that I've received from our members, that they do feel that there is that inclusion. And I think that there is always a sense that we want to, while it is not the oppression Olympics, we want to make sure that we are centering our most marginalized members.
Can you share a little more about the work of the gender and queer consultants and how they work with the production and how that initiative started?
Yeah. So, our consultancy directory was born out of the idea that I noticed that a number of our members were doing this work independently. And I also noticed that there's a gap in education. So there's a lot of members within our theater community at large that don't understand, the need for a gender consultant, right? And so what does a gender consultant do? Well, it's a consultant that provides our community the necessary resources for their theater projects, that anything that has to do with queer or trans themes. And I recognized that we could create this hub where folks could find folks that are already doing the work out there, but this could be a centralized hub of, so it sort of just facilitates, again, it's sort of this bridge, advocating for our members by giving, by giving them the work to do the consultancy work and providing the resources for the theater that saying, oh, I'm doing this queer show. Like, I need help. I need a consultant. I think of gender consultants just like an intimacy consultant director. It's, I think, slow to catch fire, but I do think it's absolutely crucial and vital. And my friend, Josephine Kearns, who has been a colleague of mine for about 10 years. She's a key, and we were out of touch because she lives in Chicago and I'm here in New York, and we actually got reacquainted because of Ring of Keys. And I recognized that she was doing this work full time, and she's about the only person in the country I know, and the only person that she knows in the country doing it full time. sadly, not at this moment because, well, none of us are working, but, right. But I met with her and we sort of built this directory of consultants together. But that's only an offshoot from the larger member directory, which we haven't had a chance to talk to about yet. So I'd love to like tell you a little bit more about that.
Yes, please.
Which goes back to, when we were first building Ring of Keys, right? It was twofold. We wanted to build this community, but we also wanted to serve as a resource for the theater industry at large. And one of the things that happened to Royer and I when we were starting Ring of Keys, and it very much catalyzed the member directory. OSF, Oregon Shakespeare Festival, was casting a queer production of Oklahoma, and they were actively seeking queer artists for queer roles. And the process in which they had to go about trying to find queer people for those roles, while, as we all know, the illegality of asking someone's gender identity or sexual orientation in a job interview is a thing. So, like, my agent calling me and being like, can we tell them that you're gay? Like, you know, it was just like this really, like, it was just like this sticky, like, uncomfortable, like, yes, like, yeah. Like, it's like, to me, it's like, can we tell them that you play piano? You know, it's like, yeah, right. It's like, that's like, that's who I am. That's not, like, that's my wholeness. And like, that's not something that we need to like silo and put in a corner anymore. I did that for so long. I thought I had to like, I was the, you know, I was the ingenue on stage and the lesbian off stage. And like, I thought that those two worlds couldn't like come together. And so we wanted to create a resource and bridge the gap, right? Bridge queerness and hiring. And, so that's what our directory does. Like, our directory is an opportunity for you to, if you're actively seeking queer people for roles, which I would hope people believe in representation and would understand the importance of authentic representation, authentic casting, or just like wanting to like broaden your portfolio of like, hey, like maybe I only know like, maybe I only have like these gay, you know, white gay male choreographer friends. Like, I want to like do the work to like reach beyond that for my next project, and I'm going to try to hire like a trans choreographer or something like that, right? Like, these, all of these opportunities are there. And so often the excuse, as we know, is that like, oh, I just didn't know how to find them, right? Like, that's why Kilroy's List, right, was created. And so Kilroy's was another great model of like what we wanted to, how we wanted to serve the industry. And so this directory is all of our members. It's totally public and visible and serving all of us.
That's awesome. Is it primarily performers and creative team members, or is it open to other roles as well?
So a key member is someone who works professionally in musical theater on stage and off stage.
Oh, okay.
So it's many, many, many disciplines. We have actors, lighting designers, dramaturgs, stage managers, directors, producers, casting directors. It's a large group of people.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And such an amazing resource.
Thank you.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
I had one more question. Also, that the directory as well, and I know this goes back to an earlier point, but just like looking through it, it was very much like that light bulb moment you were talking about when you saw Fun Home. I'm like, oh my gosh, there are so many other queers working in, you know, the theater that I didn't know existed. So it was just from like that perspective, it was like, oh, this is like overwhelmingly wonderful.
It's so overwhelming. And like also that we're not a monolith, right? That like we are all like we can look very like many different ways, and that there's not one way to be queer. There's not one way to be trans. And that to me is also what's like, I love about the visibility component. And just like one other thing is that was always has been really important to the creation of Ring of Keys, which is that, you know, I didn't have that as like a 17, 18 year old trying to figure out who I was, and to think that there could be these young baby queers trying to figure out who they are, and they could go on this resource and be like, oh my God, like I can do musical theater and be queer. Oh my God.
Yes, that's
available.
Can.
You can, right? So that just like warms my heart thinking about like this 16 year old just emailed Ring of Keys the other day and was like, I'm 16 year old. I'm like, where were they emailing from? Like Montana or something. They're like, I'm the 16 year old in Montana. And like, can I join? I'm like,
oh, love that
baby.
Yeah.
Like, no, but stay in touch
soon.
Yeah. So
Andrea, is there anything else you want to share about Ring of Keys that you want our listeners to know before we move on?
I just want to spread the word about it. I want more people to I want to see more partnerships with organizations and theaters utilizing Ring of Keys. And I want us to have funding. So that's the big thing, so that we don't burn out. And I'm getting there, you know, it's hard to do something for free, but it's a labor of love, right? I really believe in the work. So,
Well, let's jump to the queer gives section we do every episode
too. Yeah, great segue.
Yeah, we definitely want to shout out Ring of Keys. So how do folks learn more about you, donate to you, volunteer?
Yeah, so you can go to ringofkeys.org, and ringofkeys.org/donate will take you to our donate webpage. We are currently fiscally sponsored, working on our 501c3 paperwork, and that should happen very, very soon. I'm actually looking for more help right now on grant writing. So if there's any folks out there that like want to donate their labor in that capacity, I'll just put that out there. We're also really in need of, some web help. So if there's people that know coding, our new website launched in February when it was a long time coming, and but our web guy that built it is not available to continue the work.
The website's beautiful.
Thank you. There's little glitches that keep happening, and the web person that built it is like getting frustrated because they don't have the time to devote to it. And it's like, we weren't expecting those glitches. And I don't know. It's just like startup growing pains, really. Yeah. That's what I feel.
Mm-hmm. Never easy.
Like, yeah.
And the design is just beautiful too.
It's yeah, like... Meg Elliott. So Frank Noir and Meg Elliott. Meg Elliott was our web designer and Frank was our developer. So they both are amazing humans. And I'm so thrilled to have their support.
That's awesome.
I mean, to have their labor.
I'm sure their support too.
Yeah.
I'm sure you got both. We're going to go back and ask a couple questions about your career. So as you said earlier, you describe yourself as queer ingenue, which I think is just fantastic. Queer ingenue needs to be like a new category of performer, I think. But you originated it. So you performed a lot of kind of bucket list roles for actresses. What was it like to play all of these iconic roles as a queer performer? What kind of did you bring to the role that may have been slightly different?
Well, I never really thought of it that way. You know, I guess I just brought my fullness to the role. I brought my whole self to the role, and that is a part of who I am. And I think I think of my queerness as a part of my identity as sort of like, I think of it more actually in auditioning. I used to think of it as a superpower, as like, ha ha, like you don't know this about me. It used to feel like this thing, that a way of empowering myself in the room, to walk in a room and be this like ingenue with like long curly hair and like the wrap dress and be like, oh yeah, like I can like almost like this manipulation to make me feel confident, but it's like, yeah, I can look like this, but you don't know my secrets. Like, you don't know what I'm actually doing, which, you know, in the end I come to find out is not actually serving me, right? After a while you learn, oh, actually it's not serving me to think that I'm playing their game by dressing in this wrap dress and thinking that that's what they want to see. No, they actually want to see me be myself, bring my full self to the room. And so, I guess that's how I would say that. How did I have a queer perspective? I mean, I just, you're using yourself as this vessel, and this is my experience. And I mean, I guess the adversity that I've experienced as a queer person is some of that fire in my belly, right? Is like, I bring to those roles, but yeah, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Is there one of those shows that you've been in that you either think is queer or you would like to see a queer version mm-hmm. of?
Well, I really want a queer Music Man.
Okay, now I do too.
Okay, so
I love that.
And like, I haven't written like my thesis on it. Speaking of this thesis on Joan, I haven't written like a Music Man thesis, so this might not entirely track, right? But I'm imagining, like, what if we have like a trans Harold Hill, okay, like a non-binary Harold Hill. But they like have to disguise, because it's 1912, right? So it's like an Albert Cashier situation, right? Where they're like, you know how they'd go to, you know, disguise as a man in order to fight mm-hmm. in the Civil War. Like, mm-hmm. I think I have that right. Is that right?
I think. Yeah, I don't know the name exactly. Not, but yes, okay. That's a thing people did. Yeah.
Sounds familiar.
So,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, in disguise, because they can't live their authentic self because it's 1912. And what if Marion is this queer woman, but she like doesn't know it. And then it's like, you know, that's why she's singing Goodnight, My Someone. And like, they say that she's this like old maid, but maybe it's cause like she hasn't, cause there's like no queer people. Ooh,
it's got chills.
Yeah. Down.
I feel like that's the subtext of old maid anyway.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Exactly. And then, right. Okay. So the other idea too is like Marion the librarian, like when Harold Hill is like creepy in the normal version, mm-hmm. super predatory, chasing after her in the library. And she's like,
what the fuck? I'm at my job. Like, leave me the fuck alone. Like, why are you taking after me? This like rape culture. Instead, mm-hmm. it's like, actually they're like, you know, they have to be actually, what's the word? They're in hiding. Like they have to be, they can't let people know that they have this attraction to one another.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And then at the end, we don't think of Harold Hill as this con man because instead we recognize that, like, actually it's this trans person and they had to do what they had to do for fucking survival.
It's like he solved the problematic parts of it and made it wow. queer. It's like two for one. That's awesome.
I don't know that all, like, I haven't actually sat down and like looked at it like scene by scene, but like I think about it often and I'll be like, yeah, someone is probably going to do it. I hope I get credit. I hope I get to be like,
I'm saying, I think you need to pitch it.
Oh,
you need-
yeah. Yeah. You need to produce it and star in it.
Well, we are actually like, these are the kinds of things that we're trying to do with Ring of Keys. Like we need to get past some of these pandemics so that we can get back to the focus of our Queering the Stage series. But, and I hope that doesn't sound like I'm trying to get like, we have to do the racial, you know, racial justice work. I'm not trying to say that, not to do that work too, but COVID has taken a lot out of.
Yeah. We need to get past COVID. Agreed.
But so our Queering the Stage series is like, we've done that in concert twice. But I imagine a world in which we're having a producing arm within Ring of Keys and we're queering musical productions like that.
Oh, man. That sounds like a dream.
Sign me up.
Yeah. I was like, how can I help?
Funding.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, licensing issues too. We have to figure that out, but we're looking into that. And then I think that really helps our industry understand what does it mean to be inclusive. I think if we have to really provide that platform for folks to think expansively about hiring and that's only the onstage part, right? Like it's a little more concrete to understand what it means to like hire expansively for like stage manager or dramaturg, I think. Mm-hmm. But I think when it comes to like thinking about hiring for different bodies for a certain role and subverting the norm, like that's to me like where I think our Queering the Stage series could be actually very useful for folks to understand the meaning of that.
Yeah. It's so important to see it, to believe it, right?
Yes.
If there was anything else, Andrea, you wanted to tell us about the Queering the Canon concert? I know we just kind of mentioned it there, but if there's any more kind of about the concept of that show and I guess if there's a way for listeners to check out the videos or if there's plans for another one in the future.
Yeah. Queering the Canon was our benefit concert this past February. And that was an idea I had to sort of like continue to riff off of the Queering the Stage idea. And, I hired a co-producer and they and I developed, the idea to commission our key songwriters to write songs in response to Golden Age era songs. So we gave them a list of very like gendered songs from the Golden Age canon. And then they selected which ones they were wanting to, queer or subvert or, you know, write against or be inspired by, right? Any of that. So, the song, the original song was queered in the casting of it. So for example, the song Maria from West Side Story. Originally, it's usually sung by Tony in the musical. That was sung by a queer woman, a black queer woman in our concert. And then the counterpart was the key songwriter's song, which was called Emma. And it was this like queer love story between two women. And it had like kind of the same yearning as Maria. So it was like, you could see mm-hmm. how she was inspired by it. That was, and then that was sung by a queer woman. So we had Maria and its counterpart, Emma, sung both by key members. The new canon song written by a key songwriter in response to the old canon.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
That's really cool.
Sometimes I can't say it very succinctly, but when I wrote the press release, I could. It's just saying it. It's like, I really have to like break it down for people to understand. And we did that. So we had about seven song, a call and response songs. So, I enjoy being a girl. What else did we do?
Did you do There's Nothing Like a Dame? I feel like that's one of my favorite. Someone needs to queer that song.
I think that was on our list, and I don't think anyone picked that.
Next time.
Yeah, we did Simple Little Things. Key member Amara Brady wrote a song in response to Simple Little Things, and we changed a little bit of the lyrics when it was sung by the original song was sung to make it into like this lesbian domestic story, like the sweet little, like, all I want is to just be like with my wife, you know, mm-hmm. just like at home. So yeah, it's sweet.
That's awesome.
Sweet.
Oh, that's awesome.
What was the song that we did about top surgery? And If My Friends Could See Me Now was sung by our non-binary key member, Sav Souza. And it was like a striptease. Where they took their shirt off and revealed their top surgery. It was amazing.
Wow.
And that was really fun. Yeah.
I really want someone to queer Happy to Keep His Dinner Warm. I just hate that song. And
I forgot that song existed.
Yeah. Ooh, that's a good idea. We did 80 Annie by Trans Mask Person sang, I Can't Say No. I Can't Say No. 80 Annie's song, I Can't Say No, was sung by a trans mask person. And we switched the gender lyrics a little bit. And it was like so fun because it was about, it was just like a different play on like gender dominance.
Mm-hmm.
That was really fun.
That's really cool. Are you guys planning to do another one in the future?
Yes, I hope to do more. Again, COVID is really getting in the way.
Agreed.
I had to do a lot of pivoting in the last couple of months to really shift our needs programmatically to what folks needed in this moment. And we were going to do kind of a Queering the Stage Pride concert thing. And then we shifted that to make sort of just it being a space of healing for our Black identifying keys. But I do hope to get back to more riffing on this theme.
We hope so too.
Can you tell us really quickly your meet cute story for you and your partner?
We need it.
Clea played my mother in Gypsy. I was Louise.
So not just like your mother, but like Mama Rose.
Clea was my Mama Rose. But like, okay, like we did not. So that's like always the first thing that I throw out. Like I once told a friend that and a new friend, I told her that and she threw her head back so far that she like hurt herself. Oh my God, that's hilarious. No, we just became friends during that show, but it's fun that like that is like how we met. Like we were sharing a dressing room and it was like we were like the two like lesbians in the cast. I don't know. It's just funny. We didn't start dating until like 2 years later, but it is pretty funny that is how we first became acquainted because she played my mother. And I did have like reservations at first of like, I can't. So we were friends and then had a moment where we were like, oh, there's sexual tension going on here. Like we need to address this friend. And I did have a moment of like a reservation about, should I be dating someone who played my mother? Like I was just like, that's so wrong. And I was like, it was a play.
No, it's so great.
Dream. Wow.
I also think I have a crush on like every Mama Rose. So like, oh, I totally understand that.
I know, right? I had such a talent crush at first. I was like, who are you? Like she just dazzled me. I was like, who are you? Where did you come from? So,
wow. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
Yes, please. Good
time. Okay, one last question. Outside of theater, do you have a queer culture indulgence you want to share?
I mean, I guess I just go back to my roots and like, it's like the indie folk music, right? So I like figured out my sexuality through Indigo Girls and like listening to Strange Fire.
Perfect.
It's so cliche. Ugh. But
if it works, it works.
I guess so. Yeah. So that, you know, like Melissa Ferrick, Ani DiFranco, Ani's my favorite. And, mm-hmm. you know, all those, like, I used to like go to a lot of like house concerts and listen to things like, you know, Aaron McEwen or like Chris Williamson, her album, like all of that. I just love that music. Like that centers me. So I love that stuff.
Amazing. I feel like I listened to a lot of Ani and then I didn't realize that Ani was like queer until after. I'm like, well, of course. There's like so many things that you look back and you're like, okay, that made sense now.
She was the first concert I went to with my girlfriend at the time. And I think that was like the first time I was around so many queer people at once. And it was incredible. Yeah.
I like wouldn't even watch a show. I would just like look around the crowd.
I kind of felt that way about Indigo Girls concerts because my best friend and I were obsessed and were like groupies and we followed them to like all, we saw their shows in five different states. And I remember just feeling like, oh my, it was such like a secret society. Like, oh my God, lesbians. Oh, to bring it full circle. Lesbians.
What was the furthest you traveled to an Indigo Girls concert?
I think it was Milwaukee from, I went to Ball State University. So like from Indiana up to Milwaukee, I think. Yeah, I think we saw them in like Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, New York.
Love it.
That's awesome.
How can our listeners follow you on the internet?
I am found on the interwebs at my full name on Instagram, AndreaPrestonario.com. And ringofkeys.org. And our Instagram handle for Ring of Keys is ringofkeys.org. O-R-G.
Awesome. Everyone go follow. Thanks again, Andrea.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for listening. If you like this episode, please rate, review us, share us with your friends, and come back for more interviews, queer content, recommendations, and eventually discussions on live theater, which I know we're all excited to get back to.
And you can follow Thesis on Joan on Instagram and Twitter at Thesis on Joan. And you can email us at thesisonjoan@gmail.com.
Like I didn't know any other lesbians besides, Ellen DeGeneres. And so it was like, what, you know, like, what is this? Like, what are these feelings? What is this feeling? So sad and exactly. Wrong musical.
Also queer though.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at SuppsMusical.com.